Welcome to This Is Us podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Hansen, and my wife and I have the honor of serving alongside an amazing team as lead pastors of Hillsong Church in Denmark and Malmö. This podcast is a collection of short episodes regarding life, leadership, and culture. If you haven't done so already, please click follow and subscribe. And as always, if you find this to be valuable, feel free to share it with others. Hey, welcome back to This Is Us podcast. It is great to have you and hope you've been enjoying this. We have done a poll recently among some of our listeners about what people want and what you guys want. And it seems like we're on right track, but obviously we are more than willing to hear from you, so let us know. But today I want to talk about finding team members, finding staff, if you will, and in particular, high capacity people. Now, I'm obviously a pastor, and I know that a lot of our listeners, they are working in a and serving in a in an NGO capacity, whether it's for churches or just NGOs, as volunteers or as team members on a team. There might be people here that are, you know, you're also leading in a staff-related capacity, which is awesome. But I think in particular, in terms of NGOs, we are often driven by the need to get volunteers. But I think all of us are always looking for great people, whether it's great staff members, great team members, great volunteers. And the balance that we find is often the balance between available people and capable people. You know, we want someone and we want them yesterday. And so we're looking around and you see someone put their hand up. But just because someone's available doesn't mean that they're capable. Sometimes there's a reason why people have all that availability on their hands. So you want to find some good team members, and how do you find them? First and foremost, you got to know what you're looking for. What actually it is that needs to get done and who can do it. And so the question that you need to write down is, what's the requirements needed? And I think when it comes to that, the two main things that you're looking for, it's what's the time that's needed? So what's the availability that's needed in order to do this role? And what is the talent, time and talent? What's the availability is needed and what's the capability needed? We often say in church and in our church is that people can serve with three different things in our context, time, talent, and treasure. You know, someone might have a lot of time on their hand and that's what they can offer. They can say, hey, I can come around the office, I can come around church, I'm available every Sunday. Other people might say, well, I don't have a lot of time, but I do have a talent. You know, that could be anything from audio editing, video editing, musician. It could be you're an accountant, you're a lawyer, you are great with Excel spreadsheets, you do bookkeeping, you do, I don't know, you're a photographer, whatever it is, that's your talent, but you might not have a lot of time. And then there's other people that have treasure, finances. The Bible talks very clearly about it. God is the one who gives us the ability to create wealth. So just like he gives some people an ability and a talent to play music, he gives someone a talent to you know, write songs, to take photos. So he also gives someone a talent to create finance, to create wealth. And it's something you can serve with. You can actually help bring provision for the vision. So at the end of the day, as pastors, and I'm really speaking in a church context right now, at the end of the day, we are constantly looking for the intersection between people's talent, people's passion, church's need, and God's calling. Really, that intersection between those four areas is what we would define as someone's grace zone. You know, it's someone that's talented, and we've talked about this before, but someone being talented and being good at something. What are you good at? And what are you passionate about? That's not necessarily always what you're good at. What you're good at is not necessarily what you are passionate about. Like, you know, the classic example I would use in a church context is that you get someone in who's good at being a school teacher or a kindergarten teacher, and you're like, yes, because every church needs workers and helpers and team members in the kids' ministry. So the moment we see a school leader, school teacher, a kindergarten teacher, we're like, yes, we need you. And, you know, and we send them into the kids' ministry, and people might be scared of the kids' ministry because it's like the place where we see a lot of people go in as young people and come out as old people, and they've just been there their whole lives. And so we try and figure out, okay, how can we, you know, make best use of this person? But what they're good at might not be what they are passionate about. If something you've worked with the whole week, maybe Sunday is the one area where you don't want to work with that as well. That counts for all areas. That might also be finances. It might also be music. It might be a whole bunch of different things. So now it might be the same thing, and that would be awesome. So people's talent, people's passion, and then churches need. What is there actually a need for? You might be the best sculptor. You might be so passionate about it, but there might not be the greatest need in your local church for a sculptor at this stage. Maybe around Easter, we need you. Maybe around Christmas, we need an ice sculptor. But most of the year, we might not need a sculptor. So what are you talented? What are you good at? What are you passionate about? What's the church's need? And then what's God's calling? What do you sense God is calling you to do? And that might work against some of the other things. And that's a challenge. But God knows. And so really explore that. And I want to encourage you to be exploring that. And that is what serving in church, why it's so powerful and how we're outworking our salvation, because it's in that team context that we're discovering who we are, what we're good at, and what God has called us to do. I've been reading Galatians lately, and in Galatians chapter 2, Paul, he talks about his journey to becoming an apostle and an apostle to the Gentiles, to the non-Jews. And in Galatians 2, verse 6, it says, he was saying, as those who were held in high esteem, whatever they were, it makes no difference to me. I love Paul. God does not show favoritism. They added nothing to my message. So he just throws that in there. In verse 7, he goes, on the contrary, they recognized that I had been entrusted with the task of preaching the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter had been to the circumcised. For God, who was at work in Peter as an apostle to the circumcised, was also at work in me as an apostle to the Gentiles. James, Cephas, and John, those esteemed as pillars, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me. They agreed that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I had been eager to do all along. I love this because I love that, you know, Paul's focus was recognized by people. But you also notice that his grace zone, it was found in and through community. It was found in submission to proven and trusted leadership. You know, they recognized what was on Peter's life. They recognized what was on Paul's life. It's interesting because having Peter and Paul, if you had them on your team, you'd have been like, oh, awesome, two peas of a pod. I can use them interchangeably. But they weren't. They were both talented at preaching and leading. They were both passionate about preaching and leading. There was a need for preaching and leading, both to the Gentiles and to the Jews, but God's calling set them apart. God's calling was one was called to the Gentiles and the other one was called to the Jewish community. And so it's the intersection between those four. A matter of fact, if you read Galatians 1 and 2, you see this amazing journey in Paul's ministry. It's a very humble ministry journey in Paul's life because you see him from the moment that he has an encounter with Jesus and finds Jesus, or Jesus finds him on the road to Damascus, then it says he spent 3 years plus potentially another 14 years just building foundation. He went away for 3 years, just built his foundation with Jesus. Then he went to his peers. Then there was accountability to his elders, to the trusted leadership that he mentions here. And then there was this evaluation as well. It says that that he presented to them, that the trusted leaders, this is in Galatians 2, verse 2, that he presented to them the gospel that he preached. So basically he says, hey, this is what I'm preaching. And he says, I wanted to make sure I was not running and had not been running my race in vain. So there was a willingness to be evaluated. And I just think these are just amazing leadership skills and abilities that we're seeing in Paul's life. So humble. So, I mean, here's successful ministry, and he's like, hey guys, can you just check up on me? Can you just check that I'm doing this right, that I'm preaching right, that I'm saying things right, I'm doing things right? And so this whole journey from conversion to building the foundation to doing ministry with his peers under accountability, in leadership, in this community, this is what church is about. This is what church community is all about. Your gifting, your talent, your ability, what God has in you, that is one of the main reasons we talk so often about getting involved with team, getting coming on board on teams serving in church is because this is what takes place. This is what gets brought out of us. It's discovering who we are. Man, you're so good at that. Hey, man, I just noticed this when you talk. This just, wow, that's amazing. You know, noticing people's gifts, noting their passion. Man, it just seems like you're so passionate about that area. Going, man, that need that you're fulfilling there, it's unbelievable. We couldn't have done kids without you. We couldn't have done ministry worship without you. You're so good. And then on top of that, hey, I just noticed God's call on you. There's a call. And obviously, that's all of these four things is something that we're discovering in community, under God, in accountability, which is so nice. So when we're talking about who are available for a job, we look at are they available, are they capable, and are they willing? So we're looking at availability, capability, and willingness. Now the challenge with this is that the different values, availability, capability, and willingness, can be so different, and so they can create different dynamics. So for example, you can have high capacity and no availability. Now, when we talk about high capacity people, we're talking about people who are proven in their field. It might be that you're looking for a great leader to take on a department or an area of church, and you're talking to someone who's a high capacity leader. It might be a business leader. It might be, you know, someone that's already running other parts of the ministry. It might be someone that's just got track record, you know, like runs on the board from, you know, another season of life. So high capacity, but they have no availability. And we go, oh, I don't know if I want to ask them. What I've found about high capacity people is that they've got no problem saying no. And it's not personal. They're not judging you. They're not angry. They are high capacity people. So they understand the dynamics. They understand what you're going through. They understand why you're asking them. And high capacity people with no availability, they will say no if they cannot help you. Because they're high capacity, they're not going to say yes if they can't help you. And they're not going to say yes if they think, oh, I don't know. So the worst thing that can happen when you ask a high capacity person for help is that they will say no. Man, I've had so many no's. And that's okay. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, because what you're doing is that you're highlighting a need and you're highlighting a place for them. So if later on they become available, they know to come and talk to you. Would they do that? Yes, because that's what high capacity people do. Now, you might have high capacity and low willingness. Now, low willingness, that could be any reason, a number of reasons. It could be, you know, they don't think that they fit in. It could be whatever. It could also just be bad attitude. You can have high capacity and bad attitude. And often if there's a bad attitude, there'll be a whole bunch of demands. If I'm going to do that, then yeah, I have to have this. I have to have this. So it's really important that you discover, is there a willingness to be involved? That if they are available, is there actually a willingness? And I think you can ask that question from the beginning. And if they are from the beginning going, you know what, I don't think I want to, I would encourage you not to try and speak them, talk them into it. I think you're on borrowed time. And so just be very aware of that and be cautious of that. And then you have high capacity people with low availability, which is one of the most common traits, high capacity and low availability. There is a reason why they're high capacity. It's because they get things done. Things come to them and they get it done in the workplace, in their personal life, even at home. They just get things done. They're very, very seldom do you see high capacity people just sitting around. You know, if they've got time on their hand, they are painting the house, they are, you know, mowing the lawn, they are out doing, they're cleaning something up, they're helping a friend, they are, you know, writing on an idea, they are, whatever it is, high capacity often also means low availability. So we're talking about people that are, they are willing to help, they've got high capacity, high willingness, but low availability, okay? These people, I think a few things that we need to remember about these people is that they will ask lots of questions, qualified questions. And the thing about this one, especially pastors, church leaders, can I encourage you? Do not mistake questions for attitude. It is so easy to go, oh my gosh, they got so much attitude. No, they're just asking questions because they're high capacity people. They want to make sure they get the job done. They want to make sure they're not wasting your time or their time. Okay, So when they ask questions, it's because they're still deciding. They're not having an attitude. They're not making demands, okay? You've already established that. This is not about, you know, bad attitude or bad moral or whatever, or, you know, low willingness. No, high capacity, high willingness, but low availability. They want to go, okay, with that 1 hour I'm going to give you, am I actually the right person for it? Can I get anything done, or am I just going to get in the way? So don't mistake questions for attitude. When it comes to high capacity people, you got to be structured. There has to be a structure around them. There has to be clear expectation. What are you expecting out of them? When are you expecting it out of them? How are you expecting it out of them? There has to be clear lines of communication. Who do they talk to? Who do they report to? Who reports to them? Clear lines of communication and a simple workflow. A simple workflow. I mean, high capacity people but low availability, these are your potential staff. I mean, staff, for me, you know, when you look at a potential staff, staff is someone that is already doing a great job, but you know, if only we had more of their time. And that's what you do when you put someone on staff, you're buying their time. You're saying, man, imagine what they could do with 4 days. Imagine what they could do with 3 days. Imagine what they could do full time. High capacity, low availability, these are your potential staff in the future. So when you meet with them, treat it like a job interview. Have an agenda. Answer. Ask questions. Think about how you're going to onboard them. You know, don't just throw a responsibility at them, but actually, what's the onboarding process that you would want with people? I mean, that's a question we should have for all our team members and volunteers. What are the expectations? I'm saying expectations because I've written / KPIs. So what are the key performance indicators? What are the things that they can look to and you can look to actually see that they are doing a good job? Everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to have a feeling that I've done a good job. But people need to know, when have I done a good job? If you're constantly working but you don't even know if you've kicked a goal, that's so demoralizing. We got to know, man, that was a good Sunday. You know when people say, man, that was a good Sunday, and you stop and you go, what made you say that? What are the indicators you looked at on a Sunday that go, that was a good Sunday? I think every team should be able to assess at the end of a Sunday whether it was a good Sunday or not. And that's more than just atmosphere. That's more than just a feeling. That's more than just you had one nice conversation or a great sermon or whatever. What are the indicators in your team that it was a good Sunday? Your team deserves to know that. And then what are the possible upskilling for that person? Okay, we're talking about high capacity people, but low availability. Now, you might have low capacity and high willingness and high availability, but they're just low capacity. I mean, you might quickly write these off, but these people, they're actually very teachable. They're very willing. They have a lot of availability, got time on their hand, but they will be time consuming, but they are teachable. Now, you might have low capacity, low willingness, but high availability. Just be aware you have a danger of attitude here. But you also have the potential for discovering someone's gray zone. If you potentially discover what they are passionate about, their willingness will go up, and now you have someone who's teachable. And so just be aware of what people, what zone they're in, what season they're in life. And then the last one is that you've got low capacity, you've got high willingness, and you've got low availability. I mean, this is just a low entry job. This is just when someone, you know, we just need manpower. We just need someone to move things from A to B. We need, you know, we don't need you to have like a doctor's degree to be able to do this. We just need manpower. And that's not a job that is less than anything else. Every job has value. And as long as we are good as leaders of connecting the why we do what we do, why we do to what we do, it adds value. Now, when you have these high capacity people in your team, just remember that the moment you say yes to them, it will challenge your capacity as a leader. When you are a leader of high capacity people, it doesn't mean you have to be the best on the team, but you got to be humble enough to recognize what you know and what you don't know. And you got to be humble enough to have people that are better than you. I love when we have people on our team that's better than me in different areas, because it makes all of us better. You cannot, as a leader, you cannot be the lid when it comes to skills. you should not be the lead. You should be the one that's being everyone's cheerleaders. Get people that are better at you in music. Get people that are better at you in leadership. Get people that are better at you in speaking. Get people that are better than you in graphics. Whatever it is, get people that are better at you around you, and you as a team will grow. But definitely allow them to challenge you on your skills so that you're constantly growing and you're constantly upskilling yourself as well. And then in all of it, remember your grace zone. Remember, when you have high capacity people in your world, now they might not be on your team, but they might just be in your church. Remember, you're not called to be their business coach, okay? I remember the first time I started, you know, mentoring and helping disciple and speaking to the lives of high capacity people, I was freaking out. I was like, what do I have to bring? And what do I have to say to this person that runs a multi-whatever company, or this person who does this and, you know, have all these amazing achievements, until I realized, wait a minute, I'm not their coach. I'm not their business consultant. I'm their pastor. So my responsibility is to recognize my grace zone, and my grace zone is to be a pastor. So what do? I pastor them. I feed their spirit, and I keep the lines clear. I might have some ideas. I might go, oh, you should do this, you know, but I'm not a business consultant. So keep the lines clear. And don't give you an opinion on areas that you haven't been invited to give an opinion about. Keep the lines clear. Be their pastor. But then as a pastor, if these people come on your team, don't compromise what you know your church needs. Just because someone is a good business leader doesn't necessarily mean they're a great church leader. It's two different things. You are the shepherd. You know what your sheep needs. And so you've got to have the confidence to go, I hear what you're saying, but this is what I believe that church needs. You know, in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him and he will make your path straight. And the reason why I'm quoting that is that I know that we need conventional wisdom. I know that. We need conventional wisdom in our leadership. But we also need the discernment when to step away from conventional wisdom and step out in faith. And that's what you as a pastor, you're called to do. You are called to recognize in consultant, you know, with your board, with your, you know, your spiritual support team, with your leaders, you are called to actually try and hear from God and go, I hear what you're saying, but this is what I feel and sense God is saying. And knowing when to step in conventional wisdom and when to trust the Lord and lean not on your own understanding. So in everything you do, be confident. Be confident. The Bible says, do not throw away your confidence, because in it, it is a great reward. Do not throw away your confidence. That is such a key line in life. Because we can often go, oh, I lost my confidence because so-and-so said this. I lost my confidence because so-and-so said that. I lost my confidence because I've got this person on my team and that makes me really nervous. Stop it. All of that is just excuses. No one can take your confidence. The only one that can get rid of your confidence is you. You can throw it away. You can throw it away because of what someone said. You can throw it away because of who you have on your team. You can throw it away because of mistakes you've made in the past, but no one can take it. You can make a mistake and go, I am so sorry. And as a leader, that's what we do. We have the courage to run a risk, and we have the humility to admit when that risk was wrong. So we have the humility to go, I was wrong. I'm confident in being wrong. And now I'm still confident in the next risk that needs to be taken. I'm not allowing that to rob me of my confidence for the next moment. So wherever you are in your season, can I encourage you, build people around you that are going to speak confident in you. I'm not talking about self-confidence. I am talking about God confidence, okay? So just we can do a whole episode on confidence. But I'm just talking about build people around you that can give you a godly confidence so you're not throwing it away as we continue to finding team members and staff, high-capacity people that can continue to build the call of God and building that which God has given us a vision to build. So thank you for listening. God bless you. Thank you for listening to This Is Us podcast. Whether you listen to them as an individual or as a team, we hope that they add value to you. Make sure to click follow or subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Thank you for joining us. We are who we are. This is us.